It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is DM Silver Adept, a.k.a. Aaron, of the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
This is Peter Willard, a.k.a. PJ156, and author of the Tales from the Lake of Sorrows series.
This is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian, from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast. And you're listening to the 174th episode of Neverwinter Nights podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and the upcoming MMO from Cryptic, Neverwinter. Well, today's episode, we have PJ156, Peter Willard, coming on the show to talk about his module series. Stay tuned for that. He's a really good interview. He's a repeat guest. We had him on several episodes ago with Lincoln Robinson, talking about Neverwinter Nights 2 module development, getting ready to drop the hammer on the sixth installment of his Tales from the Lake of Sorrows series, and it looks like it would be a star-studded module, so definitely want to check this out. He gets into a lot of stuff, plus we get in a lot of different topics and general stuff, too, on top of that, so it's a really good conversation about Neverwinter Nights 2 modules and all kind of stuff, so definitely stay tuned for that. We have some Neverwinter news and a little bit of Neverwinter Nights 2 news, and Ben's going to start off with Neverwinter.
Mainly for Neverwinter, the big news is just that the open beta begins tomorrow, April 25th at 9 a.m. for all Hero of the North founders. And for all Guardians of Neverwinter founders, the beta begins April 27th at 9 p.m. Just so everybody knows, that is Pacific time, and should be good to go. Everybody, I think, is looking forward to seeing how much more polish and changes they've put in since the last one, but again, really, in the world of Neverwinter, the big news is just that the open beta is beginning soon.
Yep, and I got an email from the Perfect World Entertainment PR specialist that we've been dealing with, and she sent me over a pretty cool video I'm going to put in the show notes. It looks really cool. It's about, I think, it's the Helm's Hold trailer, so it's definitely, there's a lot of really cool stuff there, and yeah, you gotta check it out. I'm not even gonna say much more about it than that. It's badass, and definitely check it out. They're definitely putting out some really good product here, and they're continually expanding the mob line, you know, to all kinds of different mobs and different creature types, so they're really filling in a lot of stuff and a lot of different lore and a lot of different areas, so I will post that in the show notes on our website and on the Facebook site as well. And moving on, we got one piece of Neverwinter Nights 2 news. There's a new module that was released called Krimmer, and very cool. It's based in the city of Krimmer. It's in a nation of Am, and it's a module for solo rogues of level 8, and you can level up and receive appropriate gold in-game, you know, to get started. It's an interesting setup. It says, the author says, Kamal says, that you may like this module, you may not. Not too many people start off with that, but at least it sets the stage, you know, sets expectations. Krimmer is experimental and is focused primarily on the urban environment and providing the feel of a city as well as rogue-focused non-combat gameplay. If you're all about combat, this probably is not the module for you. Krimmer pushes NWN2 tool sets to its hard limit on objects in the external city areas. Additionally, there are numerous NPCs in the city. I recommend a modern PC. So if you have an old clunker sitting out there, you might not want to jump in so quick, you know, because it might lag you out. But I did look at the screenshots. It's very detailed, and I think if you're looking for something that's not a hack and slash, and it really, if you like the rogue type stuff, I think that this dev module, you'll love it, because there's so much stuff in there that's really tailored for that experience, and the fact that there is so much in the city and how well it's really detailed. When he says that he pushed the limits of the engine, he really did push the limits of the engine. I mean, it's very detailed, and I got to say, you know, hats off to him for, you know, really putting a quality module like this out. It's something different too. I mean, it's not just a hack and slash or even a like more of an RP. It really is. If you really feel like a rogue playing through it, I did take a look at it, and it's really well done. And it does require Storm of Say here as well, according to the thing. I was going to put it out there. And it has about 10 hours of gameplay listed. So definitely another good module put out there. I haven't seen a whole lot else. I don't know about you, Ben, but I haven't seen a whole lot else on the Vault being posted lately. Just some odds and ends stuff, but nothing really show noteworthy.
Not overly.
No. So, and it's something else, you know, I haven't even seen a custom content challenge lately. If we used to cover them monthly. I haven't seen one on the Vault lately. Unless they're posting it somewhere else, we're going to have to, I'll have to follow up with the boys that work on that old Amethyst Dragon and whatnot to get down to the, you know, see if they're still running those and, you know, where they're posting them at currently, if they're not posting them on a Vault. It might be the fact that the Vault's not auto-updating or the posts that are getting put in. So,
right.
And with that, you know, that's all we had. We're going to actually one more piece of administrative talk here. We are going to be recording another episode next week. So we're going to be releasing three in rapid succession, and then we're going back to our biweekly recording schedule. We just wanted to get caught up. We were on an extended break, as I had mentioned in the last episode, you know, looking for guests and, you know, taking care of business in our own persistent world and just life in general, busy or work and whatnot. So, you know, we definitely want to keep up the talk and we want to keep the podcast rolling out. So, you know, so when you go to the site, you're seeing updates, you know, so you don't go out. It's like a month goes by. I know that is lame, as one person had posted, you know, very respectfully. And, you know, I agreed with it totally that, you know, we need to be, you know, kicking out some more stuff and not waiting around for people and things. There's a lot of stuff we can be talking about regardless of whether we have guests or not. And I definitely want to get more into the Neverwinter scene, you know, dedicate more time to it, because there is a lot going on on that front. And, you know, it's really going to be up to us to get our noses in there. We've gotten the access we need. It's just, we need to get our butts and other parts into that process so that we can actually, you know, report on it better and to, you know, give you the audience a little bit more information on the product as it gets closer to release. And, you know, hopefully we get a release date soon, but I can't see it being too much further off. You know, not like a year or anything like that. I think we're under a year for sure. And maybe even the 6 month range, but I have no internal information of such. So I'm just talking out of my rear end here, but just from what I see, as far as, you know, from beta testing it and the communications that I'm receiving from the Cryptic PR staff, it looks pretty promising on that front. And something else too, that I'd like to get into later is the Foundry. You know, the last couple of times we tried to get on, the Foundry was locked out, so I only had limited access to it for maybe a week or so, and I was putzing around. Got some feedback for Andy Velasquez, handed it off to him. He was very receptive with that feedback and stuff that I thought that, you know, would be really beneficial to be released out of the gate for custom content creators. You know, so waiting to hear back, you know, when they're going to open that back up for public consumption, and so that I can start putting some stuff together for an episode. I would like to dedicate a whole episode just to the Foundry, just our take on it, and maybe even some basic how-tos at some point. Well, with that, I think we'll get into the interview. You got anything else, Ben?
Nope. I think I agree with you. Let's just get straight to the interview.
All right. Coming up, Peter Woolard, a.k.a. PJ156 from the Tales from the Lake of Sorrow series. Well, Peter, thanks for coming on the show again. It's been it's an honor to have you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And for those who are listening to this episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, Peter here is the author of the Tales from the Lake of Sorrows NWN2 module series. And he had came on several episodes ago with Lincoln Robinson to talk about Neverwinter Nights 2 module development and a bunch of other stuff, actually. So welcome to have him back. And, you know, we're going to be talking directly about all of his great works. And yeah, I think that there's, what, five or six of your modules?
There will be six. There's five currently. Six is in the can, actually.
That's awesome. And that's why I wanted to have you back on the show, because I really think that the audience, you know, really needs to hear about a lot of all your whole series, all five and six parts that are of it.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, yeah, you're welcome. To get started, you know, start off telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into Neverwinter Nights 2 module development.
Okay, well, I live in the UK, in the south of the UK. I have been building for Neverwinter Nights 2 for 4 years, 4.5 years, which was when the first of the series came out. And actually, I played just the other day the very first version of the first of the series, and you can see what 4 years has done in terms of the quality of the output. It was quite interesting and fun to play, but anyway, that's an aside. I suppose I was 12, that sort of age, when I got into role-playing, which is 35 years ago, so the maths don't look good particularly. I started out with D&D, I think, and then quite early on got into RuneQuest, and all of my pen and paper, I'd say 90% of my pen and paper time was spent playing RuneQuest. And I sort of got back into D&D when the CRPG games started coming out. Baldur's Gate was, you know, the first big release, clearly, that got a lot of people into it. And then progressed into Neverwinter Nights 1, and I played with the tool set there, but I didn't want to dedicate the time to it. So once Neverwinter Nights 2 came along and I got bored of playing the official campaign, I had to go with the tool set, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have a very similar background at doing about 30, well, actually 40 some podcasts. I think that's a reoccurring thing. People get, yeah, you know, you jump in early and you get rolling, and that's how it ends up happening.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting seeing some of the comments coming back and some of the people that I'm in touch with on the various forums that I know better than just by their handle and to talk to them on the forum. And we're all about the same age and we're all of the same background, as you say. And it's actually not that too many sort of younger people there, which I guess doesn't surprise me.
I think a lot of the younger crowd is kind of, I think they miss out because they're playing games like a lot of the Xbox type style games and stuff like that, and away from the PC games that we grew up with a lot, because that's where it was at when we were growing up. You know, the Gold Box games or a lot of that, the old stuff the TSR made before even Baldur's Gate came out. You know, that was revolutionary by itself, the Baldur's Gate series and all that came after that. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely it's one of those things that, like, not to diverge too much from the conversation, but like when me and Ben went to the game fairs the last couple of years, you know, Ben, you know how, I mean, a lot of the younger people there, they didn't even know what Neverwinter Nights was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
or some of them, by the sounds of the conversation, weren't even that sure what D&D was.
Yeah. And that was a geek fest.
Yeah.
That was an RP geek fest. I mean, it wasn't even like, you know, we were like, you know, checking out at an accountants convention or something.
You probably would have found more D&D people at an accountants convention.
Probably.
Yeah.
So can you give us a bit of a backstory of behind your module series?
Yeah, it's to some degree, it's been organic. As I say, I started out with that first module with some clear ideas about what I wanted to do with it and where I wanted to go, none of which materialized. Although some of the themes that are in there have stuck, which I guess is good, but it's a series of six modules, all of which tell a story in their own right. So it's six individual stories, and you could play any one of them isolated from the others. I think that's more true of the earlier ones than the later ones. But yeah, as I say, it's six modules. They're set in on the Sword Coast, slightly to the southwest of Neverwinter. I made up this area called the Lake of Sorrows. It's kind of a fiction within a fiction, if you like. It's not it's not canon content for the Sword Coast, but it fits what I wanted to do. And it takes the player from first level up to about 14th level. And in that time, you start out looking into a smuggling ring and dealing with a smuggling ring, and gradually, as the modules progress, I develop some more of the themes in that appear in the sixth module, and that kind of rounds out the story. So yeah, it's like six individual modules with this overriding story arc. The first of the modules, Sheep and Stone, came from reading, I don't know if you know the book, but John Mead Faulkner wrote a book called Moonfleet, and I just read that, and there were sort of all sorts of ideas about what I could do with a Neverwinter Nights module that was based around smuggling. And what I wanted to do was to build that into the Neverwinter campaign as it already existed, and I could see an outlet there, because mine's set at the same time as the SOZ modules, and actually a lot of the places and people that appear in the SOZ modules also appear in mine, or they're talked about. So Sasani is there, Nasha is there, Naval is there, all of these people that people are used to seeing from the official campaigns also appear in my module. So I'm hoping that I kind of tie the dates in quite tightly, and also sort of bring the whole thing together and give people some sort of firm background that they're used to be playing in. But my overall concept is that after the war with the King of Shadows, you know, Nash is going to be pretty short of money. He's got an army to build. He's got a burnt down docks to sort out. So he increases taxation pretty much across the board. And when you get increased taxes, you get smuggling. So the kind of the concept there behind Sheep and Stone is that you've got people using the Lake of Sorrows as a drop-off point, putting things on boats and then bringing them into the Neverwinter docks from the riverside, just in small boats, and kind of building on those themes. Because when I read Moonfleet, I wanted to have things in there about wreckers and smugglers and sort of all of those sort of fine ideas, and some of which are there in the first module, and some of which really appear in the last module. And we start talking about the idea of wrecking, you know, bringing a boat to the shore by putting fake lights out and things like that. So all of these kind of ideas I had then did make it into the module, but it was never really, I guess, what I wanted it to be at the very beginning. And it was a very much a learning exercise. Sure, at that time that I was going to be doing six modules, or going on a 4.5-year journey, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like the way you tied that all in and the backdrop. I mean, it's really, really in depth, and, you know, really does, like you said, you know, give people a background that they're familiar with and they have some comfortability level.
It makes it easier for me as well, because I've got lots of ideas there that I can build on, and actually I was just testing one of my modules this evening, Dark Days of Waiting, which is number 4, and you get into a conversation with someone who actually knows that Sasani isn't what she seems to be. You know, they've observed, they've watched, and they know. And so there's a bit of a sneak at that, because your character's there ostensibly at the same time as your character is there from the official campaign. And your character from the official campaign is mentioned, although clearly not by name, because I couldn't do that. But
right.
But Sasani talks about employing another party at the time, which is why she doesn't have work for you. But also that they're bringing in all these goods that you can buy. So I'm kind of trying to tie it in. And there's a bit of a cheeky nod towards the fact that this guy knows what's going on in Crossroads Keep and knows what Sasani is. And sort of there's a hint at that without. So it kind of, again, just tries to tie it in. So there's a little bit of familiarity there, which I don't know if it helps or not, but it helps me.
You know, what was the inspiration like for the stories that you built in? I mean, what like how did you come up with the ideas? Is it something like you had on pen and paper, a campaign you started, or exactly like how did you come about?
It built quite slowly, because when I did Sheep and Stone, the first module, I only had that module in mind. When I built the second, it started to occur to me that I was fast enough and good enough with the tool set to maybe put out a module every 8 months to a year. And so I started to get some confidence. And then I started thinking about a story arc. And actually, in truth, a lot of the elements which come up in the very last module, I've fed back into the earlier modules. So I've rebuilt them so that story arc is more apparent than it probably is when you first played the game, if you did them as standalone modules. So the overall concept built over time. And really, I was very confident about what I wanted the story to be, but I've not really stopped until actually quite recently and thought about what the story is about and what the overall theme is there. And actually, it's about the progression of the character within this overall plot, but the plot is about families. There's different families in there, and some of them are exceptionally dysfunctional and they've got their own things going, like the Tyson family, which is the the Lord that you're working for. You either work for Lord Tyson or his son as the modules progress. You're very much into how their family's working. And then two of the NPCs also have their own issues going on about their families and what they're doing within that. And you're really carried along with those three storylines, the two main NPC storyline and this storyline that comes through from Lord Tyson. And that seems odd. It seems like you can't build a module around that, but I have. I hope that you enjoy what I've done.
Oh, yeah, you did a spectacular job. No doubt about that. I mean, a lot of times stories do come about that way, like where you have an idea of what you want to do. But until you actually start delving into it and starting to see the connections and building, I don't know, a lot of these different aspects of it, dimensions of it, that's how things really start to snowball. Like,
I think so. I think for me, I see people, I listen to people on the boat or talk to people on the boat who have a concept of what they want right from the start. And that's good, but I don't think you can be too precise with it because it is going to grow. Scope's going to creep as ideas occur to you. And what has happened with me, what you end up with isn't really what you expected at the beginning, but that doesn't make it bad. It's just something that's developed for you.
Yeah, definitely.
So obviously as things progress in the worlds of Neverwinter Night 2, player feedback's becoming more and more important. What sort of feedback do you get from the players, and is it the type of things you expect to hear?
That's a good question. I mean, the answer is I get good feedback. I've been pleased with the feedback I've got, and I know that I've got one or two people who really do appreciate the work that I've done, and I get good feedback from them. It's always a mixed bag when you're on the vault. There is enough feedback given, and it's one of the things that upsets me about this whole process. I mean, I do this because I really enjoy doing it. I think we all do. Sometimes it seems like an ungrateful world out there, and that especially is reflected through the feedback. Not necessarily bad feedback. I can take anything that comes on the chin, and you read it, and you try to gain something from it. But it's that quite often I think, you know, I've got 2,000 downloads and 10 people have given me some comments, and it would be nice to think that all those 2,000 people have played it, and it may actually be that I've got 2,000 downloads and only 10 people have played, which I guess is fair enough. But I do sometimes think there could be more in the way of feedback.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think feedback is something that when you get it, in our last episode we talked about our persistent world and how, like, recently, you know, over the last, like, month or two, like, feedback and, you know, player interactivity has been at a pinnacle high. And just saying about how much different of a feel you get as a content creator who have feedback. I mean, it's not about, okay, well, you just want to hear all good feedback. No, you want to hear what people think. I mean, you want to be able to – I think the format doesn't lend itself to good communication to, you know, with people. Like you said, you have 2,000 downloads, but you have no idea exactly how many people have actually played it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to gauge it by that. But another thing, too, like you brought up something that brought up in my mind about – you know, you take it on the chin, you know, you see stuff like that. Well, you can see even on YouTube and different other mediums where a lot of people, when you're dealing with the internet, people just write crap because they want to write crap. And you have to be able to weed that out.
Yeah. You know? And so, I mean, there are people but at the end of the day, there's usually a nugget in there. Something's true. And if you can pick that out and take it on board, then everything's good. But as I say, sometimes it's difficult to read.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it depends on the type of feedback. I mean, looking at the feedback that we've gotten, you know, you can see right off the bat if somebody's just from another. And I don't know how bad this how much this happens in module development, but I know PW versus PW. I know in the past things have been pretty, I don't know, cutthroat maybe. I'm not exactly sure. You'd have people from one persistent world, you know, posting all kind of garbage on somebody else's on the vault when the vault was like one of the written records, so to speak, to where you would go. And you could tell. I mean, you did a little research and you could start seeing, oh, this same person whacked this server and this server, but when they look at this other server, they just love it.
Yeah.
So you know right off the bat somebody's playing some games. So little Super Mario Brothers is going on, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, you know, like you get feedback saying, hey, blah, blah, blah about your module is I think it should be this way, or I didn't know if I cared for this or whatever. And you can take a look at that constructively and say, hey, look, you know, that's a good point. Maybe I should do this a little differently here or there. So.
And I got a lot of that from the first two modules, particularly. You know, there were a lot of feedback that a lot of comments that came back where you look at it and you think, well, I could do that with a little bit of extra effort on my part. I could fill that person's need, and I tried to do it. So it has been good, but it has been mixed. I just wish there were more of it.
Well, I think that's something that, you know, as the days go on, I mean, obviously things right now in the community aren't what they had used to be. The Neverwinter Nights 2 kind of came out of the gate wounded, like a wounded duck to begin with.
Yeah.
Due to the fact of the poor quality when it first released. However, you know, as a side note, I mean, I just had a conversation 2 days ago with a coworker of mine who played Neverwinter Nights 2 when it first came out. And they're like, you know, and they didn't even know that we ran a persistent world, and they didn't know anything about that. And I was talking to them about it. They're like, well, that game, you know, it was all buggy and blah, 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 blah. And I told him about it. And he was like, okay, whatever. You know, didn't even think that, you know, hey, maybe the things are a lot better now. And, you know, it's stuff like that. So how many players are out there that played the game 6 years ago when it came out and never touched it again?
Yeah.
So I mean, that's part of the part of what kind of a environment we're all in. You know, whether you run a persistent world or you work on a single player module, it's something we have to deal with and change the perspective.
Yeah, and if you go into it with open eyes, I don't think that matters. I mean, as I say, I think a lot of the people that do this do it because they gain some pleasure from it.
Right.
And you have to. You can't.
Oh, no.
It's not something you can drive yourself to do. So, you know, you accept that you might only get the one download. That might be the person who plays it. I mean, clearly we're not in that stage yet, and I probably wouldn't do it for one download, but you know what I mean.
Right. I know what you mean. Yeah, it makes, you know, I think that another thing, too, you know, I think it's a little bit difficult, and this is one of them good/bad scenarios. The good part is that they're selling the game again on GOG, and it's got a lot of purchases. The bad thing is that the GOG site and the GOG forum don't have a way, or like people have posted, but there's like no official marketing of custom content which made the game what it is.
Yeah.
So it's not like Baldur's Gate, you know, like the old Baldur's Gate, you know, they remarket it out there, you can buy it. But it's not like there's custom content for it. I mean, you know, they just sell it and there you go. This is like, you buy this and you're getting this. I mean, you're getting a whole other product. And I see that as being more of a problem because you have all these people coming in that have no freaking idea about multiplayer. And what's even worse about that is that now you can't even go to the multiplayer component built into
and see what's out there. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to play games. Find out what servers are even out there. It's a little bit disconcerting at times. But if there's a way that could be addressed from a high level at GOG or even whoever's giving them the rights to sell it and say, hey, look, you know, we need to come up with another official, you know, this is, look, you know, you look at that crappy IGN site anymore. It's like hardly maintained. There's hardly nothing going on it. I mean, I know there's work being done, you know, to keep the scripts running and this, that, and the other. But, I mean, it's not updated. That site has not been refreshed or redesigned in, I don't know, at least 6 years.
Yeah, it's struggling.
Yeah. And I think that, I know they tried with the Neverwinter Nexus, the Nexus Neverwinter, what is that, Nexus Mods or something like that?
Yeah, Nexus, yep.
I see that being sparingly used. I mean, people do post their stuff there, but the interface, the website is not exactly what I would call conducive to, you know, people easily getting their way to content. And the fact that it's only for single player modules and custom content like hack files and stuff like that. They have no section for people to list their persistent worlds or anything either. So I think you need a one stop shop. You're playing Neverwinter 2, bam, you go to this website, bam, and it's all right there. So
hopefully we'll get it one day.
Hopefully.
He says.
Well, you know, this is that one of them things is if there's not enough hours in the day because, you know, me and Martin Togo from the Rise of Sauron server, we were talking about building a site like that. You know, as I have the web development background, I've thought about doing it myself. But the problem with that is that the amount of time to do that, not counting the time to run a persistent world, not
throw the podcast in the day.
Yeah, there's just not enough hours in the day, and I still work a full load job. you know, you just can't, you know, somebody needs to, who has the same similar background, you know, definitely might want to talk about getting something together like a seriously cool looking website. You know, it's easy to navigate, stuff like that. I think that's something that would greatly benefit the community. You know, we would even support it financially, yeah. at least in that. I would actually like to see everybody get together and just put something out there, an official presence that we could get some SEO ranking on and get something out there so that everybody that comes in the game from GOG or wherever can, you know, jump on and download great modules like yours.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yep.
Definitely.
So moving on, I got sidetracked a little bit, but moving on, what are your future plans for the module series? I know you said you got six in the bag right now.
Yeah, my concept was that six was the end, partly because I was getting, one of the things I enjoy about is the NPCs I've written. They very much are the story. They are the story. And I've got to the point where I'd like to write about some different people. So my concept was that six would be the end, and that I would move on to a different project. What's actually happened is I do have another project which I want to start once I'm clear of this one. It's going to be a hub. Basically, I've got another concept for another area, not far from Neverwinter, set at the same time because I'm comfortable writing there. And that's going to form a hub which I can dip in and out of and have different modules running from the same hub. And at the same time, Tales from the Lake of Sorrows, I've left myself one story hook in module six, which will become module seven. Only taking one of the NPCs forward, so that solves the problem. I can bring some new ideas and some new thoughts and some new people through. And I do have a seventh module in mind, which is going to be called the Soul Cages, and that will happen once this hub's built and the hub's out there, which is going to be the middle of next year, sort of time scales I would have thought for those two modules to appear on the vault or wherever they appear.
Yeah, right. Right. I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely like the fact that how you're planning on. I mean, you definitely got it all a heck of a story arc. Excuse me, a story arc going for you. And I think that people who play your series of modules are really going to get a lot out of that.
I hope so. I mean, the NPCs I've got some fairly strong, started to develop the NPCs. I tried to think about the bits I liked from the Baldur's Gate series and the bits I didn't like. And I liked the sort of interaction you got from the NPCs, although I thought it was a bit light in the Baldur's Gate series, that there could be more. What I didn't like particularly was that if you wanted to follow an NPC's story, and this is the same to a certain extent with the OC, you pick up the NPC, they give you a slight feed into their story, whatever that may be. And then you go off on a separate subquest and you solve their problem for them, then you come back to the main story. Whereas with the modules I've created, the NPCs to a great extent are the story. You've got Solace, one of the main NPCs. She's already tied in with the Tyson family right from the beginning, although you find out how that is as the modules develop. Her story is very much the story, the main story thread, and she's attached to that. So when she's in the party, because she's not in the party all the time, she's only in there for sort of two modules, and then she drops in and out for the rest of them. You're very much being carried along by her part of the story, and the same with another NPC, Honor. Honor's story, again, is very tied into the main story. It's not something separate. It's something which is developing as the main plot is developing, and towards the end, Honor's story becomes the main plot. So I've tried to keep the NPCs interesting and very tightly relevant to the story. So I think it's less about this abstract idea of your PC brings a party together. And that party then go through and do this module, as your PC has dropped into a story where lots of people's lives are taking place around this, and your PC just becomes the focus point for all these different story threads taking place until they all tie off at the end. And the one I leave slightly untied is Honor's, and hers then potentially will become module 7, and she'll be the NPC that gets carried forwards. She's the one that most interests me, in fact.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, you definitely got a in-depth, you know, NPC setup. And I do like the fact that their story is the story. I mean, the story is about them and the way you interact with them.
Very much so. I got that started at the beginning, if you see what I mean. I had that concept already, but because I was only thinking of one module, it's quite light. But as I started to develop the way that I wanted these things to go, that became more and more the focus of what I was doing. And as I say, it's meant that I've had to go back and revisit the earlier modules several times. I mean, Sheep and Stone's now going to come out at version 6, and the different versions are not bug tweaks. They're whole big chunks of dialogues and different things going on and areas being rebuilt so that the whole thing appears to be one story at the end of it rather than a touch disparate, which was the risk I had if I didn't go back and revisit these early modules, if you see what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean there. I mean, we've revisited earlier content in our persistent world, you know, several times just to keep things up. Because every year that went by, we rolled out new technologies or we rolled out, you know, new ways of developing areas and stuff like that. You know, we went back and we're like, you know what, we need to update that if you start here and it's like you get like a couple, you know, chapters down the road in the story and you're like, wow. You know,
yeah
so we had to go back a few times and doctor up stuff to keep up the same level across the board, you know.
And another aspect of that for me is that, you know, I would hope that if people got Sheep and Stone 4.5 years ago, they might have played it more than once. And I want to try and make it interesting for people that I know have played it 3 or 4 times. I want the fifth time they play it, them to go, oh, I don't remember that, or this area is new and this is something different to do. So it just keeps the whole experience a bit fresher. And there's an aspect, of course, as well. I find in the sixth module that I'm actually able to create good areas or better areas. I'll leave anyone else to judge whether they're good or not, but I can create better areas faster. So I went back to the early two modules and just redid the areas completely because I could do that. I could do it quickly because Sheep and Stone, the outdoor areas were taking me weeks to build. And now I can do the same in just a few days. So it's, you know, it's me developing as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, you definitely speed up as you gain experience and you start getting little nips and, you know, little tips and tricks and how to do stuff faster.
Yeah, I think as well, going back to the NPCs as well, I don't know if you come across it, but I think I did something a little differently as well, because there's 6 modules, but 5 of them tell the story arc, the principal story arc. What I did with the 4th module. In the 4th module, your main NPCs, all of your main NPCs are taken away from you and you get given this new guy who you've met 2 or 3 times through the module, but he becomes more important to what you're doing. So he joins your party and you go away from the town where the principal setting is Thunder Bay. That's where the Tyson people live, or the Tyson family live. And you go away from Thunder Bay for that module because you're doing something that's away from Thunder Bay. But I was aware that for the 6th module to make sense, the last part, there's lots going on in Thunder Bay, which are kind of story development. And I thought about how I was going to do that. And I thought, initially, I thought maybe just a text document, you know, 2 sides of A3 that tells the story of what happened while you were away. And instead, what I did was I made another module. And this is module 6. It's module 5 in the series. It's the 6th module. And it actually takes place at exactly the same time as module 4. So when your NPC leaves, this module starts. The module's called From This Comes Strength. It's module number 5. And that one, what you do, instead of playing your main player character, I give you a BIC file so that you can play Solace, which is one of the NPCs. the NPCs that you leave behind then have their own story in Module 5, which gives you all of the concepts and ideas that you need to understand what's going on in Module 6, but it's all being done away from your PC. So your PC is talked about. You very much get the impression that you're still in the same story, but you're seeing it from another perspective. You're playing this ranger who has her own objectives, and she is carrying the story forwards along with the other NPCs that are not with you because you're away doing something else. So all of the same names and same faces are there. They're just carrying the story forward in a different way and closing off some of the threads that appear in earlier modules, which, you know, I just wanted to present in a slightly different way. And I hope that people... I've got good feedback for the module. I think people have enjoyed it, although a lot of people were a bit suspicious about playing a big file that was presented to them, but in terms of presenting the overall story, that's what made sense to me, and I think it's something different. I don't think other people have done anything like that, and I would certainly try to do something similar again because I think it's worked quite well.
So what would you say is the favorite parts of making your modules?
I think it is writing. That's not true. It's developing the concepts of the NPCs and the stories. I detest writing conversations, but I enjoy what comes out of the wrong end of that, if you see what I mean. Once it's all done, I very much enjoy developing the characters through the conversations. I'm not a big fan of scripting because I don't do it so well. I, like some other module users, rely heavily on Lilac Soul, and that's pretty much where my scripting comes from, unless someone's kind enough to write something for me. So it's all scripted at a fairly basic level, but I hope that the conversations that I write and the way I've developed the NPCs brings a kind of a complexity into it that means that people can forget that it's very much a basic module. I think a lot of... You go on the forums now, and a lot of the module writers are very technically oriented people. They come in from a scripting or an IT background, and so the technical part of the module development comes very easily to them. And I see people talking about scripting activities that aren't in the stock content and all these wonderful things. Matt Reeder does his boulders coming down mountainsides and trees falling over and things like that. And yeah, I see all these fantastic things. And I can't do that, so all I can present is a story and people, which I hope is engaging enough for you to forgive the fact that in terms of moving the content forwards, I'm not really doing much. I'm doing this is the basic game with some custom content in, rather than something which people are going to go, wow, I didn't know you could do that. And I think to some degree, most people don't know what you can do to say wow or not.
Right.
So maybe I can be forgiven for that.
Well, you know, something you bring up too when you talk about that is the fact when you're doing single player modules, it may be better to take your route over getting something a little, you know, scripted heavily, like, because the difference between single player modules to me and persistent worlds is, see, you can get away, like, obviously you're going to need to do a whole lot more scripting in a PW versus a single player module for all kinds of reasons, you know, mostly administrative, but, you know, depending if you're trying to push the envelope or not. But the point I'm trying to make is that because it's a single player module, you know, when you're dealing with really complicated scripts, you can't be certain that it's going to work, especially dealing with the Neverwinter Nights 2 engine as much as we have, you know, writing custom scripts to do all that quote cool stuff. You know, we've had to spend countless hours to figure out nuances and things like that, that I don't know how easy or feasible it would be to do in a single player environment, because, you know, you're testing locally at a single player level, but when somebody gets on their computer, you know, and they experience some kind of oddball thing, you know, now they're like stuck in your module with some kind of problem that you really are going to have a hell of a time trying to diagnose.
Yeah. I think that's the truth of it. I think that the debugging is a big issue, and to some degree keeping it simple enables me to present as kind of stable a product as I can, given my level of IT skills, if you see what I mean. You know, there's still bugs in there, but they're easier to track and actually easier to fix. I mean, one of the things I'm trying to do with my new module is to keep more in campaign for, so that not only can I hot fix, but I can hot add modules, if you see what I mean. That's the concept of it. But by keeping it simple the way I do, it does mean that I can, you know, when people have had problems on my single player modules, I've been able to almost post a link within, you know, within an hour or two of finding out what their problem is, because the problems are never particularly complicated. It's usually a conversation string that I didn't test properly. And there's no better tester than the 20 people who play my module when I put it out there.
Oh yeah.
You know, cause you get those 20 different views at it.
Right. Oh, well, yeah. Testing, you know, I have yet, I mean, I know we've put out some very complicated stuff and, you know, but even the simplest of rollouts, I can't think of the one where we haven't had one issue with it. You know,
yeah.
Like I could test my ass off literally and run it 100 times and do this, that, and the other, but there's always the one little thing that you forget or don't see, or it's always, I don't care who says what, you need eyes on stuff other than your own.
Yeah. And one of the things with single player, and I think this is possibly less of a problem with you for Persistent Worlds, is quite often it's not your fault, and you're trying to second guess what that person on the other end is doing. I mean, when Sheep and Stone first came out, I got complaints that there was a bridge right in the middle of town and I hadn't put it there. And I got complaints that there was a warehouse was missing, but the doors were still there. And all of these things come up and you look at it on your PC and you look at it and think, well, it's all there for me and I don't have a bridge floating in the middle of town. And then you sort of, you know, I clicked quite early that the first question you've got to ask is, have you emptied your override? And they do, you ask that question and they empty their override. They say it's fine now. And you've got to deal with the concept that, it isn't actually a problem. You don't have a problem with your module, but they have a problem in the way they're playing it or they've set it up. And you've got to second guess what they're doing if you're going to provide them any support. Sometimes you just can't.
No.
But, you know, you always give it your best shot.
Yeah, I tell you what, that's the it's kind of funny because in the last patch of Neverwinter Nights 2 that came out, the 1.765 that came out probably about 3 years ago now, maybe a little longer even, but they added options to the server where it would disable the client's override folder.
Yeah,
and you know that's great. That's peachy.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work perfectly because there's still people who get on the server who got their own custom, like, hair pack or some bull crap that, you know,
yeah.
You know, that they only see it, but, you know, the other players see, like, goofy stuff. But it's weird because, you know, even with that, at least you have an option to take care of most of the nuances that could be, you know, introduced via override or whatever.
Yeah, and I don't, and that makes things a little bit harder. What I try to do actually, and I've tried to do recently via the campaign folder, is to introduce the custom content that people have mentioned a lot to try and get around that. So some of it's already there, but that's very difficult to do. And actually, it got to the point where I was creating more problems than I think I was solving. So I've ended up putting in the stuff that I like. And thinning it down to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the right approach because you know that you really the bottom line is that I think you handled it in a brilliant way. The way you put that in your module, did you clear out your override folder?
I mean,
I think that's awesome. I mean, it's one of them simple little things, but it's so great. that right at the beginning, that to me is like that's genius because that's simple. It's right there in your face. You know, you say yes, okay, well, if you see a floating bridge, yeah, you know what you should put in there? You should put in there, if you see a floating bridge out the middle of town, you didn't check your override.
Yeah, you didn't clear your override. Yeah, I could put that in the opening sequence. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be funny. You know, if you see a bridge floating in the middle of town, or have an NPC, call it the technical support NPC. Yeah, like the frequently asked questions. Like the first option, do you see a floating bridge?
Yeah, floating bridge, clear override out, please. Yeah.
Make it look like a paperclip.
Yep. I love it. That would be awesome.
I see you're trying to address a floating bridge.
Yes.
Yeah, you can even work it in, you know, people who are like sticklers with immersion factor stuff. You could be like, you could have an NPC, so, like, you could call him like the some kind of like mental issue person, you know, like a mental thing. It says, I see a bridge over there. Do you see a bridge over there?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other option I've got is to put a floating bridge in the middle of town, and then that just solves all the problems. Everybody's got one.
Yeah. You could have it like highlight, you know, selectable. It says, this is the floating bridge.
This is the floating bridge.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, you know, close it out. You know, I wanted to thank you again for coming on to talk about
your project. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I hope that people have enjoyed listening to me waffling on.
Well, the waffling is very good. I was highly entertained with what you put out there, and I really think you've done a great job. I mean, I say that to a lot of different people, but you really did do a great job on your modules. And, you know, I really hope that you get the feedback that, you know, really you deserve for putting so much time and for, you know, quality effort into putting out these modules.
No, thank you. Thank you. I hope I'm hoping that in the next couple of weeks it's going to be out. I mean, for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because I want it off my desk. And secondly, because Baldur's Gate Remastered is due out on the 1st of June. And if I don't get out before that, I'm not going to have any players, so I'm planning on getting my module out as a complete campaign series in the next couple of weeks. Stalled a bit this evening because one of my NPCs disappeared, but I think I've solved that. That's the kind of release time I've got for the whole series.
Well, you know, hopefully you get it out, and definitely ping me so when you release it. I can, you know, get it out on all of our web presences so that, you know, more people see it.
I'll be grateful for that. Thank you very much, Ryan.
No problem. Well, with that, I'm going to give you the closing line.
Get in game, level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2012.